Turn your radio on.
This is a download from Triple J.
Australia's national youth network. On radio,
on TV,
and online.
For more music, current affairs, comedy, and culture,
triplej.net.au.
And now...
Hello, Dr. Carl.
Hello, and I'm just insanely jealous that you went to Austin, Texas, which I love to pieces, and that I didn't, and I'm...
Oh, you get to travel, though. Someone's been
Austin.
To Antarctica twice in the last 2 years.
And I'm heading off for the space shuttle soon.
Yeah, you just held up a sheet of paper in front of me and said, someone's going to the space shuttle and you're not, which I said, Dr. Carl,
humility. Is that a three-year-old child or a four-year-old child?
Tell me, though, what's this deal? What is this? I didn't realise. I thought NASA was putting the space shuttle launches on the back burner. How are you going to a space shuttle launch?
I'm going to the second last one.
Yeah.
And I have a secret dream that... One of the space shuttle astronauts will get a flu, and I'll say, quickly, we need somebody totally unqualified from Australia to fill in at the last minute.
And you're going to go up there?
Yes, me.
Maybe
I just
not.
It in.
But you're going to watch it. Is it happening at Cape Canaveral or is it in Houston?
Cape Canaveral at the launch site.
Okay.
And there's a reasonable chance that I'll waste my money because quite a few of them don't go up exactly as planned on the time. They're delayed by a week and I've got obligations back in Australia. So if it doesn't fit in with the 5 or 7 days that I've allowed myself, I miss out.
When is it happening?
Second last one, 29th of July.
Jeez. Lucky.
And spending my own money. That's how lucky I am.
Well, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, for me, yes.
Something else big happened this week in the world of science. The Large Hadron Collider went back online. Mm. It is turned back on. Of course, it suffered some damage
a few months ago. Complicated. So when they first started on, it ran for a little while, and then one of the wells went, an electronic circuit went, and bad things happened. And now they're just running it at half power, and they'll just gradually ramp it up. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever used Wi-Fi off a computer?
Yes.
Right. It wasn't invented because we were looking for Wi-Fi. It came as an accidental side effect because we were trying to work out how to find black holes. Have you ever used GPS in a car?
Yes.
That was invented because of Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. And out of the Large Hadron Collider, we'll have all sorts of wonderful things coming out, which will not come immediately, saying, well, they've been going for 2 days. And we have. What's your results? It's like saying, okay, we've set up this institute to go looking for cures for cancer. We gave you the money yesterday. Well, have you got anything today?
My favourite reportage last night was the Large Hadron Collider is turned back on. When are we going to fall into a black hole? Okay.
that's totally irrelevant. It's like saying, when will the hell mouth open up and the killer rabbits from hell come and get us?
Very
you
funny.
Tell us killer. And by the way, the cost is remarkably low. It's less than the cost of 3 American B-2 bombers, planes which have no other reason than to drop bombs on people and kill them. It's cheaper than 3 of those.
We'll be excited to see what happens out of the Large Hadron Collider over the coming months.
And years.
And years.
Years. It took a century to turn Einstein's theory of relativity into GPS, but now it makes benefit to those slightly drunk people on a Saturday night who can't find the local pizza bar.
All right, Dr. Carl's joining us. If you've got a science question, now is the time to give us a buzz. 1-300-055-36. I can actually see a few lines free if you want to call right now. Of course, if you've got any answers and you can't get through, you can tweet Dr. Carl at DOCTORKARL or leave a message on the forum or text us at 1975-7555. You ready to jump in, Dr. Carl?
Lay it on us, baby.
All right. Jennifer, good morning.
Hello, how you going?
Good. What's your question?
I work in a job where I've got to count things and I've got the music turned up really loud and I can sing along in my head or think about anything other than what I'm doing and still count. But as soon as I try to sing out loud, I can't count anymore. Why is that?
Okay, so what sort of things are you counting?
I work in a germination lab, so I'm counting tiny little seedlings as they germinate.
Right, and do you have a little clicker in your hand as you go along?
No, I just count inside my head.
Wow, I've never been able to do that. You must be really good.
Oh, yeah, I'm so smart.
You are, yeah. Now, you're saying that when you try to add an extra activity, sometimes the activity interferes with the counting and sometimes it doesn't. So listening to music doesn't interfere with the counting ability, is that correct?
That's right, and thinking about something totally unrelated to what I'm doing doesn't interfere with it either.
But trying to sing...
Yep.
Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Yeah, okay, forget that theory. I think it's just a case of we can only do a few things. It's remarkable that our brains can get us through the day. We've had to do all these complicated things with vision, where each time you look at a human face, you just don't build it up from scratch and work out who it is. And then that if you did it from scratch, it'd take you minutes if not longer. And even today, the smartest computer on earth cannot recognise the parent of a two-year-old child, which any two-year-old child can do. Mm. Any two-year-old child is smart; their brain is smarter. So your brain is doing all sorts of clever things and is doing all sorts of tricks to make the job easier. And I think that when you try to actually sing, you're using a circuit that may be involved in counting.
Okay.
I think. Like you might be, even though you're not going 1, 2, 3 with your voice box, maybe there's a part of your mind that is going 1, 2, 3. And then if you try to generate words like, I love you so much, ooh ah, come to my place and have a beer, then that interferes with the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 circuit. You try to use the same bit of circuitry, I think. If we've got a psychologist who's familiar with this, I'd be very happy if they could ring in or give us an answer on Twitter or on our good friend, the Triple J Forum.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Jennifer.
Okay,
thank you, Dr. Jennifer.
Bye.
Just on that, Dr. Carlin, being able to do many things at once, is it true, scientifically true, that women can multitask better than men?
No, I don't think so. And the more I read about it, the more I think that it's not possible. And the more I think that multitasking is crap, because you end up with people doing a lot of things badly instead of just doing one thing well.
Mm.
And I am falling more and more in love with those countries in Europe where everything shuts down on Saturday afternoon and Sunday, and you spend time with your family and forget this trying to work after 5 o'clock, although who am I to talk being an obsessive, hardworking person? But anyway.
This weekend's probably going to be the perfect example of people doing that, shutting down. Lots of things are closed on Good Friday. It's a chance for us to all stop
and be with the family
for a few days.
Yes.
And eat lots of chocolate and Easter buns.
Chocolate
Easter
is good. Yes, Jesus Christ died on a cross for our sins because of chocolate.
And so we could
give
sleep
us chocolate
in.
Or something like that.
Liz, hello.
Hello, Liz. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Good. What's your question?
Okay, so for drawing, I had a task where I had to draw a picture of the face blindly. So I held the picture of the face in front of me, and then underneath, I drew it intending it to be a replica. But when I did that, it came out in reverse, like a mirror image.
Hang on, so you were given this task in a drawing class or something?
Yeah.
And so you were not to look at what your hand was doing. You were just to look at the person and let your hand do what your brain was telling you to.
I was holding a picture of a face, and underneath that I was trying to draw exactly, except then when it came out. Yeah.
Oh, so your hand was physically underneath the picture that you were trying to draw with your hand. Okay, go on. And when you say mirror image, do you mean left and right were reversed or up and down or in and out, backwards, forwards?
It just looks mirrored, so it's completely mirrored.
But
so
people's faces are symmetrical. You've got one nose in the middle and they're fairly symmetrical left, right. They're not exactly. Oh, is that what you mean?
So the face that I was drawing was on an angle, so and half the face was cut off, and I have drawn that, but in a mirrored image. So instead of coming out exactly the way I intended it to, it's come out like in reverse. But somewhere my mind's kind of interpreted differently and come out like I intended it to draw it.
Mate, you have come across this really weird thing that happens in people with strokes and that they're using as a new technology and they still don't understand what's going on. But you can have, as a result of having a damaged part of your brain, the inability to perceive something on, say, for example, the left side of your field of view. And if you use a mirror and then reflect things across, if you use other hand, your left hand or your non-dominant hand, it changes things. All I can say is that you have entered a really complicated area. I don't have a simple answer for you. I've been listening to Natasha Mitchell on the
Radio Nationals All in the Mind.
All in the Mind. And she touched upon something to do with this about 6 months or a year ago. And I was listening to it and I had to it took me about 3 hours to listen to this 1 hour program. And at the end of it, I thought there's so much we don't know. And you've come across it, Liz. I don't have a good answer for you. It's
Do I
weird.
Have brain damage? Do
no.
I have brain damage?
No. You've touched upon some of the things that our brain can do that we don't know that it can do properly. For example, there are forbidden colours in the world that our brain forbids us from seeing. And you can actually do an experiment to force you to see these colours. And there are so many other capabilities of the brain. You've stumbled across one of them there.
So it's an unknown.
It's in the too hard basket. I'm wussing out right now, Liz. That's a really good thing you've done. So the part that was darkened and the face was, say, on the right, you drew it as being on the left.
Yeah, and when I kind of looked at it, I was like, my God, what have I done? I didn't even mean to to do that.
In fact, Natasha Mitchell had a left-right dichotomy guy just a bit, in the last four or five issues of All in the Mind. Mate, it's too difficult to cover in less than several hours, and even after then you won't understand.
If you did want to check out those podcasts, she does podcast her shows. Mind is the program. It's on Radio National and the ABC website, so you can have a listen yourself and see if it makes any more sense. Thanks for the call, Liz.
Thank you, Dr.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you later. David's calling in. Hello.
Hello, Dr.
Hello.
David.
What's your question?
Well, my question, I'm trying to keep it not too blue, but I was wondering, is there a scientifically proven way to, say, predetermine the sex of an offspring? Like if, you know, I'm a father with two daughters, and I was wondering, is there anything you can do in order to enhance the chances of a boy coming out third or something like that?
Doing headstands after the baby is born, all that sort of stuff doesn't work. You can do the spin down technique because the sperm that make boy babies is slightly different from the sperm that make girl babies. There's a difference in weight.
Right.
And you can do a bit of a centrifugal spin and isolate off the ones that you want.
How does that look? What do you mean? I don't understand. Sorry.
You generate the sperm by an interesting way.
Oh, yeah.
And once you've got the sperm, you then hand them to a laboratory who then spin them down in a centrifuge, and they separate off the lighter and heavier ones. And that's a fairly crude method, but that will give you a preponderance of one gender over the other, depending on whether you pick the sperm that are lighter or the sperm that are heavier.
Yeah.
And I reckon there'd be probably one or two other techniques, but there's nothing that's guaranteed to give you boys or girls.
Okay.
Now, are you going bald early?
Not particularly.
No, because there is a tendency for men who go bald early to have lots of girl children.
Really?
Also associated with a high testosterone level.
There you go. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
Thanks for the call, David.
Thank you for your help.
See you later. Stan here with you for now, though. Dr. Carl talking science, and I believe he may be unleashing an experiment on me. What are you doing to me this morning?
Okay, now I've given Zan a bit of paper, and this was a form sent out by a doctor, a neurologist that mentions his name. We won't read it out on air. And a hospital. Is that correct? It mentions his name.
There's a doctor and there's a hospital.
Yeah. And the second paragraph talks about, what is it? Can you read that out?
Botulinum toxin.
Yeah, so it's the uses of Botox. Now, flip the page over.
Flipping.
And you'll see on the left-hand column, so this is a genuine letter from a hospital doctor, and see the first column is neurological things like dystonias, focal tics, hemifacial spasms, spasticity, etc., right?
Dysphagia.
And then there's
I'm not a doctor.
That's right. Then there's non-neurological ones, uses of Botox.
Cosmetics.
And the second one is gastrointestinal tract disorders, and the third one is?
Gut disorders.
The fourth one I'll pronounce for you, hemopoietic, and the fifth one is?
Weapons of mass destruction.
You just threw it in
there. How is Botox a weapon of mass destruction?
Well, because it was invented by the military to kill large numbers of people.
Wow.
And it was accidentally discovered.
How does Botox kill large numbers of people?
Okay, if you want your muscles to do something, your brain says, I want to move my hand and start playing the piano. Your brain sends signals to your nerves. Your nerves will kiss a muscle. At that point where the nerve kisses the muscle, there's a thing called a nerve ending. And the nerve ending is killed by Botox temporarily.
Wow.
And so if you just spray Botox all over the place and it goes into the air and it goes into your lungs, well, you don't breathe anymore.
Ooh.
And it's a very, very good killer of people. And it was developed by the military. And in fact, for many years, we were still using the US military's source, but many other countries around the world have done it. There's no hard feelings. They all want to kill us. No one is any better or worse. Okay, some of them are better or worse. We're getting off the topic. So in 1979... it was beginning to be used for eye diseases where how the eyes don't point in the same direction, the muscles are pulling too much.
Mm.
So you got a globe and you pull on it with four muscles, one at the top and the bottom, the left and the right. And if one of the muscles is too strong, it can pull the eye off track. And in early 1980, it was first used to paralyze the muscle temporarily in kids. Now, by the way, if you go to America and you walk down the street, you will see that lots of people have got squinty eyes, but in Australia, hardly any have. And that's because in Australia, it gets picked up by the Baby Health Centre, your GP, and the doctor says, let me give you a referral to the kids' hospital where they'll do this operation for free. In America, the same thing happens except they'll do it for $10,000. So a lot of people don't get it done.
Mm.
Okay, so she was doing the operation, a Canadian doctor, Jean Carruthers, in 1987, and she was going around doing a ward round on a Sunday morning, having squirted a bit of Botox on and paralysed the muscles in the eyes of various people so that their eyes would go straighter and then maybe their eyes would come good. And she was going on a ward round with her husband, who was a dermatologist. And she was looking at the eyes saying, "Gee, Gene, you are so good. You did such a good job." And he was looking at their forehead saying, "The muscles are paralysed. Their skins look flat. Hello, dollars."
And that's where it became cosmetic surgery.
In 1987, that's how this nerve poison got used. And so this doctor in Sydney just threw it in. And it's quite right. It is, that is a non-neurological cause. So my wife, as a doctor, received this through the mail, looking down to column 5. Oh, so I can use it for hemopoietic and unwanted muscle hypertrophy. Oh, yeah, and weapon of mass destruction. Yeah, sure, thanks. No
the
worries.
History of medicine.
Having a little joke.
From WMDs to your foreheads, if you feel the need. Dr. Carl is with us. He is always telling stories and always teaching us things and answering your questions, 1-300-055-36, if you've got one. Peter's calling in with an interesting one. Hi, Peter.
Hey, mate, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, Dr. Carl, I really want to know why the brain sees things when you're on magic mushrooms.
Ah, there's a really good article about this in the Scientific American, February 2010. And the explanation is quite complicated, and I'm not even going to attempt it here, but for anybody who's interested, February 2010, Seeing Forbidden Colours and Hallucinations. They give a really good explanation. Yeah, that's right. All I can do.
Now, can you give me a bit of background on Dr. Carl, why you're so on top of everything, you're normal, but you can literally make things happen with your own brain, like...
What do you mean by make things happen?
Oh, you can sit there and I was watching a curtain and a couple of lesbians just started sort of just playing around. I was like, why can I see that? And, you know, can't watch a football game while I look at this curtain.
The moment you go into the brain, it's really complicated. Look up February 2010 issue of Scientific American. Look up Natasha Mitchell, All in the Mind, anything to do with hallucinations. And once you've spent about 30 hours listening and reading and concentrating, you'll begin to understand a little bit.
Good luck.
It's a really big topic. Right, have fun.
Good luck, Peter.
It was pointing you in the right direction. No answer.
Michelle's calling in from Rosebud this morning. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I just want to know, if you were to have sex with somebody who had a cold and you went to kiss them or anything like that, you were just, you know, solely having sex, would you catch the cold?
That's a good question.
You're more likely to catch a virus from them or a bacterium if you actually physically get it into their mouth or into their bloodstream. So at one end of the spectrum, if you walk on one side of a street and there's somebody else coughing out the cold virus on the other side of the street, your chances are very low. Walk on the same side of the street near them, it's higher. If they sneeze out the cold virus at the same time as you happen to be breathing in, chances higher again. And the closer and more intimate the contact, the more the number of virus particles that you get into your body, the higher the risk. And then if you love them very much in a special way, you may well, I don't know, with these crazy modern youth, you actually kiss people when you have sex. Well, I've never heard of that one before.
Not on Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman, no kissing during sex.
Oh,
remember
that's
that?
What they say. Yeah. They said that in Sweet Charity as well.
Thanks for the call.
Not a problem.
Michelle, cheers for the call.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Okay, bye.
Josh is calling in from Darwin this morning. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Dr.
Hey, how you going?
Good. How warm is it up there at the moment?
Oh, it's actually quite nice if you're a local because it's blue skies and breezy at the moment, so it's really nice.
Very lucky you. Now, what's your question for Dr. Carl?
I was just wondering, when the sun rises and sun sets, you can look at it much easier when it's, say, it's like 12 o'clock and it's at the highest point. I was just wondering, how come does the sun get brighter during the day or what happens?
The technical term is optical air mass. And there's, 10-something, whatever it is, kilometres of air between you and the edge of the universe, if you're looking straight up, and you call that one. The optical air mass is one. But then if you're looking towards the horizon, you're looking through a whole lot more molecules of oxygen and nitrogen. And the optical people call it, say that it has an optical air mass of somewhere between 20 and 50. So you're looking through a whole lot more air molecules and you have Rayleigh scattering happening. So on top of the fact that the light is being weakened by looking through all the extra thickness of air, the blue light has been shoved off to the side and that's the blue and the green. And you're only getting a small amount of red light. There are so few photons landing on your eyeball that you can look at it without heat damage. It's the heat damage that is concentrated to any particular point on your retina that causes everything to bubble up and give you permanent damage. Because there are so few photons coming through, because they're absorbed by the extra air, and because many of them have been shoved off to the side via Rayleigh scattering, that it's safe to look at the setting sun.
Makes sense?
Yeah, briefly, but that helps out a lot.
All right, thanks for the call, Josh.
Have a good Easter.
Have a good weekend. Annalise is calling
It's Easter too. Do you know why there's Easter? Have I to ask you this question?
Why is it Easter?
You know how you work out Easter?
What?
Well, okay, you go to March 20 or so, which is the day on which the number of hours of sunlight is equal to the number of hours of moonlight, right? Dark and night. So you go to the equinox, right, which is around March 20. You then wait for the next full moon. It might be the next day or it might be 28 days later. Then you wait for the next Sunday, which could be the very next day or it could be 6 or 7 days later. That's Easter Sunday.
That's how you work it out.
That's crazy. So Easter Sunday can be...
I thought it was when the bunny came.
It works backwards. Nowadays, they work out when they've got too much chocolate in the shops and they work backwards and they say that's Easter.
Only the nation could see the blank look you just gave me, Dr. Carl.
But the religious reason... So it can be anything from 2 to about 5 weeks after the equinox.
There you go.
And it's this weekend, isn't it?
And a reminder that it is this weekend. Daylight savings is also clicking over this weekend. A chance to get an extra hour of sleep on Sunday morning.
And in the United Kingdom, they're clicking out of daylight saving.
Well, there you go. Isn't the world an amazing place? Annalisa in Sydney, good morning.
Hello, Annalisa.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question?
My question, I've got a big port wine stain on my back, like in the centre of it. And a little bit before I get my periods and when I exercise, it starts to really, really hurt. Why is that?
So what is it, a birthmark, did you say?
Yeah, it's like a big birthmark and it's like raised a bit because of all the blood vessels and stuff that's in there, like there.
Okay.
And so every time like I like exercise a lot or... I get my period, it like really, really hurts.
Well, normally what you've got is your heart pumping away blood at 5 litres per minute and it runs through roughly 100,000 kilometres of blood vessels, which are normally kept very separate from each other.
Yeah.
Right? And so it goes into the artery, the arterioles, the capillaries, then it does whatever it's supposed to do, work a muscle, for example. Then it goes back through the veins, the venules, the big veins, etc. In this port wine stain, you've got the capillaries, instead of being really skinny, normally they're 5 microns in diameter, and the red blood cell has to squish up because it's bigger. It's 7 microns in diameter. It has to squish up to go through the capillaries. And in this particular case, you've got dilated capillaries. They're really big. And they're both superficial and deep. And so the blood can actually escape from the capillaries and then come back in again at the end. It's actually leaving and coming back in again. The red blood cells themselves are also escaping. I don't quite understand the pain. I can sort of vaguely understand it, but when I try to put a good explanation, I can't. Have you got one?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like I got punched in the back or something, and it like just like I can't like move it and stuff.
So it's like a big bruise.
It feels like I just can't like move my back because it's like someone like punched me and stuff like that. There.
Have you gone to see a GP about it, Annalisa?
Yeah, I've seen someone. They said it's all fine. It's just that what Dr. Carl said, that like all my blood is just there and it really,
But I'm then trying to think of a mechanism by which it leads to pain, especially when you're exercising.
Yeah.
And I can't quite work through fast enough in my head to do it. I'd need to speak to a pathologist.
Yeah.
And over a period of an hour, we'd probably come up with an answer. So if any pathologists are out there, can you give us our answer on Twitter?
We'll see if we can get an answer for you before the morning's out. Thanks for the call, Annalisa.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Marco in Albury, good morning.
Hi, good morning, doctors. How are you going?
Very well. What's your question?
My question is, if you're travelling in a vacuum at the speed of a bullet and you shoot a bullet out the back, what would that appear to be like for an observer? Would the bullet stop in midair or would it follow the vehicle or...?
Okay, so we're ignoring wind resistance to make it easy.
Yep.
And you're travelling, we'll pick an easy number, 1,000 kilometres per hour relative to something else. And if you were to fire the bullet directly ahead of you, it would go away from you at 1,000 kilometres per hour. And in fact, whichever direction you fire it in, it will go away from you at 1,000 kilometres per hour. But then supposing you're going past a bunch of people who are sitting down having a naked picnic in the grass.
Sweet.
I'm trying to bring a French impressionist feeling into it.
Yes.
And as drive past them, as you fly past them at 1,000 kilometres per hour going in one direction, you pull the trigger and the bullet tries to go away at 1,000 kilometres per hour in the other direction.
Yep.
Now, the bullet already had 1,000 kilometres per hour velocity while it was sitting in the gun because it was already travelling with you. Then that entire 1,000 kilometres per hour velocity is scrubbed off. It has just enough grunt to come out of the barrel of the pistol, and it sits there in the air for the briefest instant, and then with zero forward or backward velocity, falls to the ground in front of the people having the picnic.
Sweet.
Now, a lot of people have a problem with this. If you say to people, imagine that you're walking along, and as you're walking along, you're holding your hand at hip height, and you're still walking along, and you've got a marble. And then at some moment, you just drop the marble. Where does the marble fall? Well, most people say the marble just stops in midair and lands behind you, but the marble travels forward with you, having your own forward velocity. That's a very interesting experiment, and I'm so glad you're thinking of science experiments while you're drinking beer rather than other experiments.
Thanks for the call, Marco. Awesome.
Thank you, Dr. Marco.
See you later. Lisa's calling in from Maitland. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dr. Lisa.
What's your question?
I have two dogs, and one of them has red eye from a camera flash, and one of them has blue eye. And I wondered what caused the red eye, and why are they different?
I have had this question a little while ago. What's the meaning behind it, Dr. Carl?
In general, the reason that you get the red eye in a human being is that you're taking a photograph at night. At night, the pupil is enlarged. It varies in size from about 2 to 8 millimetres, so it's about 8 millimetres across, 9 millimetres, something like that. And inside the eye are a whole lot of blood vessels. The retina is a very hungry organ and needs a massive blood supply to keep it going and uses most of the oxygen in the blood. And so you'll see lots of red blood vessels. So when you're seeing the red eye, you are seeing the red blood vessels inside the eyeball. And by the way, the eyeball is one of the few places in the body where you can actually monitor part of the cardiovascular health of a person by looking at their blood vessels in real life without having to cut them open or anything like that.
Okay.
Now, if you take a photograph of a cat at night, they have a membrane called a tapetum, T-A-P-E-T-U-M, and that's like a mirror. And that's to improve their efficiency as a night-hunting animal. So the light comes in and it goes through all these cells that are necessary to keep the retina going and to process the image coming from the retina. Then it runs through the rods that do the seeing. And if it doesn't land on a rod, it's lost, but except in the case of a cat. They've got a reflective membrane. So it hits this reflective membrane and then comes forward again. So when you take a photograph of a cat at night, you're basically getting the red blood cells, but it's vastly overwhelmed by the reflection of the flash. In the case of your dogs, now you say that one dog gives a red eye. What sort of dog is that, please?
They're both corgis.
Oh, dear. I was afraid to say they're both the same breed of dog. Now, we're going to need a vet, especially a veterinary ophthalmologist, because I'm out of my depth. So you're saying you've got two identical dogs? Oh, not identical, but they're the same breed of dog. They're both corgis?
Yes.
And they're both in apparent good health?
Yes.
And one of them gives you a red eye flash? Is that and then what does the other one do?
Sort of like that bluey, greeny colour, but he's only a puppy.
Oh, okay. There's something going on, which I don't know what it is. But in this case, just an ordinary vet might be able to help us. So if there's a small animal vet out there who's done a little bit of reading on why a baby dog, a puppy we call it, gives you a bluish eye, bluish-greenish eye on photography flash, but the adult gives you a red eye, please help. I'm out of my depth.
I want to hang out with a corgi puppy.
Well,
that sounds adorable.
I do believe there's some of them in the United Kingdom. Just go to Buckingham Palace.
Waddling around the house. Thanks
they're
for the. I'm sure they're very naughty. Thanks for the call, Lisa.
Thank you, Dr. Lisa.
We'll see if we can get an answer for you before the morning's out. Richard in Sydney, good morning.
Good morning, doctors.
Good morning,
What's
Dr.
your
Richard?
Question?
Welcome.
I've just left the midwife with my wife for her 30-week checkup.
of
her pregnancy, and she actually developed what we thought were skin tags just along her bikini line, but her beauty therapist and the midwife both don't think that they're skin tags. Now, rather than being sort of a little bubble with a small join, they're actually circular and flat.
Oh, they're not like a punching ball where you've got a narrow neck and then something hanging off it.
Can I just ask, I've never heard of skin tags before. For anybody like me who's never heard of skin tags, what are they?
They're like miniature punching balls, a few millimetres across, and they have a fatty fibrous core, occur in nearly half of the population, but usually not on parts of your body where you can see them, like on your back. I had one on the back of my leg, went to see the doctor, they did it. I think, was it a freeze-off or you just tie a fishing line around it or something like that?
Yeah,
they're more common in pregnant women. There is a small genetic component, also vaguely associated with diabetes, and you're saying that now it's different.
Yeah, and the midwife didn't know what they were. I mean, obviously we're like, are they some sort of wart, but they're only localised to directly along her bikini line.
By bikini line, do you mean the top part of the bikini line or the bottom part of the bikini line?
If she across the bottom part, so the top of the thigh there.
So running along the top of the thigh with the thigh and joints on the trunk, and at the front only?
Yeah, only on the front,
And how many of them?
Oh, there's probably a dozen on each side.
Look, I would go and take a photograph first and then try, relatively fruitlessly, I suspect, to get an appointment to see a dermatologist quickly because normally they're booked out months in ahead. By the time you get to see them, it's already gone. So I'd definitely take a photograph and go to the trouble of getting a friend to use a macro camera and even a really good camera just as a little memento. And who knows, because it may come back in the future and it'd be good to have it documented now and give a copy to your local doctor.
Good luck, Richard. Thanks for
the
call.
Thank you, Dr. Richard.
Bye-bye.
Michael's calling in from Sydney too. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. What's your question?
Dr. Van.
Hello.
My question is about when you hear a voice in your head, whether it be from memory or you think you heard something or whatever, do you actually engage the inner ear and hear a sound, or does it vibrate in any way? Similar to like how your muscles can respond to thoughts. If you're thinking about moving your arm, say, like in Feldenkrais movement and stuff, you can actually have a result in the muscles.
Now, Dr. Michael, is this voice in your head telling you to do good things or bad things?
Always bad things. I don't know why. But memory and stuff, so...
It's just I'm a little concerned because, firstly, Natasha Mitchell again had a program on this, and there was a reporter from Triple J's Hack dealing with a young lady who had something traumatic happen to her. Her best friend at school committed suicide after the HSC final exams, and then she started hearing these voices that just ruined her life. Are you hearing those sort of voices?
No. I think I hear my mother calling my name or something, or a memory, like you're thinking of someone, or you're singing a song in your head, for example, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you can hear it like it's happening around you. So I'm wondering, is the eardrum actually engaged, or is it just, nerve endings flickering in my brain sort of thing?
I don't know. I'm almost certainly betting on the fact that it's just your brain is generating them electrically. There is a transfer of energy as you go from energy in the ear, which then hits your eardrum and makes the eardrum mechanically move, which makes the little bones mechanically move, which makes a window mechanically move, which makes a liquid get pressure waves of energy, which then makes a hair bend over. And when the hair bends over, it gives off electricity. I'm betting that none of that is activated, nor the electricity then going from the bent hair in your ear into your brain. I don't think there's electricity there. I think what's happening is that in your auditory cortex, and it's called the Wernicke's area, I think. Yes, it's the Wernicke's area, and it's around you, a bit behind your temple, at the level of your temple. I think that area is firing off by itself, but it's not telling you to do bad things.
No, it's just
like I have them from time to time where I swear that somebody said something, and it's not. In fact, I've just had an MRI for our Sleek Geek TV show, and I've probably got the most asymmetrical brain that they've seen for ages, and I'm still alive. So I would put this down to random noise of your brain ticking over, almost certainly not in the mechanical pathway, physical pathway, but almost certainly in the electronic circuits just firing off randomly, and hopefully, almost certainly it won't go into bad things.
Right.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
Thank you.
See you later.
If the voices do bad things, go and see your GP, because get in early if you can.
A professional. All right, yeah. We've got time for just a couple more questions. Annalie from Parks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
What's your question?
I have a question in regards to scales that measure different densities in your body. I had one done. The person actually gave me my metabolic age versus my biological age. They measured percentage of fat, water, abdominal fat, bone mass, and total muscle mass. And I'm just wondering if that's actually possible with a small, very simple scale, whether it's just what they were having me on. Or
good question. I've had this done too. Does it actually work, Dr. Carl?
Did they charge you money?
No, they didn't.
Being a real romantic, for my wife's last birthday, I bought her a set of stainless steel steak knives and some weighing scales, which I have found out is...
Fail.
Very bad.
It's really bad.
There wasn't even flowers or chocolates in there, because the moment you buy scales for a woman, you're saying, you are fat!
What's on for Christmas, a vacuum cleaner?
So I went looking for the scales, and I found some scales that apparently measured fat and muscle and so forth. And I said, wow, these are great. Do they actually measure fat? And she said, no, they just work out your weight and then just apply a percentage that on average, if you're a man or a woman, you'll have this percentage muscle, fat, et cetera, et cetera. And I went looking and I found another set which had some sort of special sensor pads which supposedly put high-frequency electricity through your body which behaved differently when it went through muscle and fat.
Yes.
And is that the sort that you had?
Yeah, they also it had two little attachments that came off it that I held in my hands as well.
Yeah, and I spoke to some sports scientists about that, and they said, if only it was that easy. And it's really, really difficult. So I think that in general, they're more entertainment value.
Yes.
I'm sorry. And if you want to do a very, really interesting experiment, get a set of scales and put them in a plastic bag, a strong plastic bag. And then shove a vacuum cleaner hose into it and hit it with suck and then see what the scales do. And if they blow up, remember, I told you not to do the experiment.
Is it a dangerous experiment, Dr. Carl?
It is to the life expectancy of the scales.
Okay.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. They'll go up to 10 tonnes per square metre.
Wow.
Think about it.
But they won't hurt you.
You won't hurt you. No, you get a bit of noise pollution from the vacuum cleaner. Okay, next one.
I think that's all
thank
we've
you,
got
Dr.
time for, Dr. Carl. Annalie in Parks, thanks for
thank
the call.
Thank you, Dr. Annalie.
Dr. Carl, we will see you next Thursday morning at 11 a.m. to talk science. Have a wonderful long weekend. Are you going to rest?
I'm going to put some rainbows on the front of our house. So for my birthday, I've got a pirate flag and a whole... What are you laughing at? And a whole bunch of Buddhist flags. So I'm a kind, tender Buddhist... pirate who takes what he wants and then gives it all back again, and gay as well, because I'm going to have rainbows on the front of the house.
You're a hippie is what you are. See you next week.
See you,